Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet. And indeed, it is the most vibrant place at all times. Today is May 15, 2014. And currently, even though the temperature is high in Prashantinilayam, hovering above 35 degrees, nothing stops people from converging on this holy hamlet. Today, we saw the third day of Buddha Purnima celebrations. Devotees from several countries, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Malaysia, Brunei, Singapore, Indonesia, Japan, China, Taiwan, all here to be at the lotus feet of their beloved master on this auspicious day. And interestingly, the theme for this year's Buddha Purnima celebrations is "The Master Lives On." And how profound it is. The Master lives on. So true. The Master lives on through His messages. The Master lives on through His messengers. The Master lives on through His miracles. The Master lives on through His mammoth missions. The Master lives on through you, through me, through each one of us. The other day I was speaking to Mr. Satish Naik, who is the chief engineer of the Prashantinilayam Ashram. In fact, I and my colleague Harishankar, we had a long conversation with him about the relationship he has with his master, with Swami, and you will soon be listening to this in the coming weeks in this segment of Thursday Live. So when I asked him how he developed faith in Swami, he said, many years ago, in the 70s, he happened to visit the house of a devotee because that devotee's daughter and his daughter were friends. And when he went there, he said he was extremely impressed with the way the parents had brought up their daughter, the manner in which the family conducted, the peace and serenity he felt interacting with them. It was a very, very novel and very soothing and calming experience just being in that home, speaking to their daughter, speaking to this couple. And he felt, if this family which follows Sai Baba is so good, then what a colossus of goodness Sai Baba must be. He has to be something exceptional, because look at this family. They are Sai devotees. And this is one of the things that propelled him to know more about Swami. And eventually, of course, he came into the Sai fold. He became a stern devotee of Swami. He developed rock-like faith in His love and grace. His professional work took him to Kenya, to Ghana, to Japan, to England, to Washington. And everywhere, it is this rock-like faith in Swami which helped him surpass so many seemingly impossible challenges in life. So yes, the Master lives on through His devotees. But there are some devotees in whom the Master shines with so much effulgence that when you see them, you feel that you have had a glimpse of the Master. When you talk to them, you feel you have felt, you feel that the Master has spoken through them. When you listen to them, you feel the Master is speaking through them. And all such devotees, they become like the flute, absolute, clear, clean, egoless, pure, straight. they become conduits of God's love. They are always connected to the Master. And after a while, there does not exist their will and the Master's will. It just becomes one will, one omni-will. And that is the space. That is when they experience the zenith of devotion, the pinnacle of love, the transcendental state of experiencing unity in diversity, unity in divinity, unity in thought, word and deed, all united in the divine, for the divine, with the divine. Swami often says, I am still looking for a devotee who lives up to the title of being called a devotee. However, there was one occasion when Swami actually certified someone as his great devotee in this Satya Sai Avatar. There were tears in his eyes when he heard of the loss of this devotee. When he went to see her in her final moments, in deep sorrow and a crestfallen heart, he told to the people nearby, we have lost a great devotee. I have lost a great devotee. We will not get a devotee of this nature again anywhere. We have lost a devotee. We have lost a devotee. And Bhagwan was in deep anguish, as if a part of him had become lifeless. This is how much Bhagwan loved this devotee. And mind you, she was not even a human being. On December 25th, 2006, on the occasion of Christmas, during the discourse that Bhagwan gave on that evening, Bhagwan recalled his visit to East Africa and the African safari, the only trip of Bhagwan beyond the shores of India in 1968. So recounting the events of that trip and the safari, Swami said, the animals also have desires like human beings, but their love towards us was unparalleled. By us, Swami is referring to him and his troop. Their love towards us was unparalleled. By the time we reached the shore of that lake, we could see big herds of elephants moving about in herds. The African elephants have enormous fan-like ears. And Swami continued, the wind caused by a wisp of their ears was enough to make people fall down. And I went into their midst in a car. On seeing me sitting in the car, these elephants raised their trunks in veneration and they paid obeisance to me. And Swami next said, the noble qualities in those wild animals are not to be found even in human beings. When you think of it, how true it is, isn't it? The virtues that animals display is sometimes, many a times, sadly missing even in humans. It is a common experience how animals love their owners with their heart and life. We know of dogs and cats who act as dearest friends, as protective guards, as reliable aides, as caring partners, and so on. They would sacrifice their lives for their owners. But have you heard of any animal except from the scriptures? Animal which is inspired thousands of minds and led them to their goal of everlasting happiness? Is there any four-legged being which has put a multitude on the Godward path and continues to do so even now? Well, what the so-called mute Sai Gita, Bhagwan's pet elephant, has taught mankind is something which evolved souls after decades of contemplation and then many more years of spiritual instruction could not communicate to their pupils so succinctly and convincingly. Sai Gita symbolizes the acme of devotion that a devotee can aspire for. So how did this relationship develop? And how exactly was this connection? What bound Sai and his Sai Gita together? How did she come to Bhagwan in the first place? And how did this love for Swami grow in her heart? And how was her final moments? Well, the story of Sai Gita is something unmatched, unparalleled, mystifying, and magnificent. So this is what we will discuss in the next hour or so tonight, and this is the most opportune and appropriate time to do this because it is during this period in May 2007 that this great devotee of the Lord bid farewell to all of us. In fact, it was a historic occasion because that year Swami unexpectedly, suddenly concluded his stay in Kodaikanal and rushed to Parthi, which was very unusual. Swami would generally stay the month of May in Kodaikanal and then return to Vrindavan and come to Prashantinilayam generally in the second, third week of June. But that year, in mid-May, he rushed to Prashanti. Swami came to Puttaparthi on May 18th, 2007. And the next day, Sai Gita was reported to be sick. In fact, on May 18th itself, as Bhagwan was driving into the ashram, he stopped at Sai Gita's shed and he blessed her with darshan and then came to Mandir. And of course, many things happened between those days, between 18th and 22nd May, when she breathed her last. And she breathed her last in the divine physical presence, even as Swami was putting vibhuti in her mouth, and Swami even created much more vibhuti and smeared it all over her body. Plenty of things happened, plenty of very, very significant things happened during that period, May 18th to May 22nd. So we will dwell on these poignant moments today and also probably in the coming week or maybe weeks, on this last segment of Thursday Life that you are listening straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday
Live. So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:50, and as I just mentioned, we discuss today the epitome of exalted love, the pinnacle of devotion, Sai Gita. As we proceed in this program, it will become clear to you why I am using so many superlative adjectives to describe Sai Gita and her love for Bhagwan. Let me begin with what happened many years ago, maybe sometime in the 80s. The university had started, the boys were staying in the hostel. The hostel, as many of you would know, is about 2 kilometers away from the Mandir. And Sai Gita's residence, so to speak, was opposite the boys' hostel, the Sai Gita shed, was bang opposite where the boys stayed. And the Sai Gita shed had high vaulted walls, plenty of trees, huge water tub, coconut trees and mangrove and so on. So one serene morning, the bhajans ended as usual at 9:30, and Swami retired to his room. The ashram again was enveloped in powerful silence. And as the devotees dispersed, carrying the serenity of the blissful morning in the chalices of their hearts, minds and senses, everyone is submerged with only one thought. Because the morning darshan is over, when can I see Swami again? When can I have the Lord's darshan again? And they knew it is not going to happen before 5 hours, because Swami was not going to come out before 2:30, 3 o'clock. Well, that would be true for any normal day, but what happened on this day took everyone by surprise, pleasant surprise. It was 11:30 in the morning, and quite unexpectedly they heard the siren of the police pilot that precedes Swami's convoy. Suddenly there was excitement everywhere, because in one instant the ashram catapulted into fifth gear, because everyone knew that Swami is coming, Swami is coming. They realized it is one of those unscheduled drives that Bhagwan sometimes took. So no one knows where Bhagwan was going. Is he going to the hostel? Is he going to the hospital? Is he going to the school? Or is it just a drive? Where is he going? The guessing game was on in everyone's mind. And either side of the road, devotees were bursting with joy, trying to get that extra bonus darshan. All the children of the Ishwarama High School and students from the hostel lined up on either side of the road. And as Bhagwan's car reached the hostel, it slowed down. And his hands were raised in blessing for all the beaming faces, faces that thrust themselves to have a precious glimpse. And at that time, as I mentioned, Sai Gita's shed was just opposite the hostel. So she too rushed towards the gate, and had it not been for her caretaker, probably should have crushed the gate. I mean, she was so anxious that she should be there right next to the road. Bhagwan is coming. She was actually there on the road even before the boys lined up. In fact, it became a challenge that day for the mahout to hold her in check. And the moment Swami's car came, the moment Swami's car approached, she moved forward. And everyone who has seen this scene of Sai Gita, when she's anticipating Bhagwan's car, they would always see that she would raise her trunk in salutation when she saw Swami. She would trumpet and she would be joyous. But that day, it was a very, very different scene. She was not her usual self of expressing her joy at seeing Bhagwan. That day, her stocky trunk lay heavily on the bonnet of the car. She just placed her trunk on the car. She refused to budge. Her ears were flapping at an alarming rate, and she was so disturbed anyone could make out. There was something which was making her so restless. And then the glass on Bhagwan's car window went down, and before anyone noticed, the moment Swami's car window pane lowered, Sai Gita's trunk slickly slid off the bonnet, now into the window. And like always, now that she had access to Bhagwan, she ever so gently touched Swami's cheek and hair. And this has always been such a delicate, such a charming and sweet sight. And now everyone was just enjoying the bliss of that moment. There was silence. No one wanted to miss even a minutest millisecond of that divine play. And something happened. Something transpired between the two, Bhagwan and Sai Geeta. And Sai Geeta slowly withdrew her trunk from the window of the car. And then, the next moment, Swami signaled something to the boy who was seated in the front. So he swiftly came out and opened the car door. And so, now Bhagwan stepped out of the car. And moment Bhagwan stepped out, all that restlessness in Sai Geeta still to some extent. As Bhagwan moved towards her, she moved a step behind. And Bhagwan started saying something to Sai Geeta, some endearing words, that's what was so obvious. And even as this was happening, Sai Geeta's trunk reached to caress Bhagwan's feet. And the moment Bhagwan touched her, saying some sweet words, the people who were watching this scene at close quarters, they could see a ripple run across her huge frame. She was so overjoyed, ecstatic. And only the ones in closest proximity probably heard their conversation in Telugu that was going on between Swami and Geeta. Swami was speaking very softly. And it was something like, come on Geeta, I have to go, Geeta, I have to go. Swami was constantly patting her trunk and saying, I have to go, Geeta. But she was protesting. And what happened was, she took her trunk and her trunk rose and fell on the bonnet again, as if saying no, a loud no. And Swami saying, I want to go, Geeta. Come on, please move. Geeta, move. And then Swami is reaching up to her cheek and Swami is stroking her, pacifying her. But she would not take her trunk off the bonnet. And as Swami kept on requesting her, and then there was a dew drop on her eye, a silent expression of her feelings, a tear found its way down the very cheek upon which Bhagwan's hand rested. And all the students and the devotees, they watched. Not a single tear, but it was a stream of tears. And it completely wet Bhagwan's hand. And then Bhagwan looked at her. And understandingly nodded. And she just stood still, unmoving, her head bowed down. And then Swami very sympathetically said, okay Geeta, I will not go. And so her ears moved a little, but she still did not stir an inch. Perhaps she didn't want to break that contact with Swami, or perhaps she did not want her Lord to remove his hand from her cheek. She just stood motionless with her head bowed down, listening to her master. And Swami again said, Swami patted her and said, go back to your shed, Sai Geeta. And she said no. Again a no through her trunk. And then, finally, Swami asked, will you go back? If I return to the ashram, will you go back, Sai Geeta? And then Sai Geeta stepped back a fraction, but only a fraction. Her trunk was still on the bonnet. Then finally, ultimately, Swami said, okay, I am not going, I am going back to the ashram. Are you now happy? And the moment Bhagwan said this, she was visibly trembling with joy, and you know, in her own language, she expressed how happy she was, and Bhagwan understood that, and Bhagwan said, "Good girl, good girl, good girl." And then Bhagwan turned to the students. He accepted the handkerchief. He took the handkerchief, he wiped Sai Geeta's tears, and then looked at the boys again. And actually very casually, Swami said, "I had planned to go to Vrindavan. I had started off to go to Vrindavan today." And the words actually came out of the blue. The boys were dumbstruck. I mean, no one ever knew. Everyone is thinking, "Oh my God, Swami was going to Vrindavan? He didn't tell us. He didn't want to tell us. We would have lost Swami." And then Bhagwan's gaze ran over all the boys, and using the same handkerchief, Swami wiped his hand. And then Swami continued. He said, "I wanted to go quietly, without much ado. But see, look at her." And then as Bhagwan looked at her, everyone looked at Sai Geeta. And then Swami said, "She knew it. She sensed it. She somehow figured out that I'm going. And see, that is why she's crying. Poor thing. She knew I'm going." And then again Swami looked back at Sai Geeta. His eyes tracing her trunk, which was now at his feet. And some of the boys dropped their gaze, and when they saw, what did they see? They saw Sai Geeta's trunk. She had gently moved aside Bhagwan's robe a little, and she was caressing the lotus feet. And now finally Swami gave a firm push so that he could finally go. And then Swami looked at the boys, and before he left he said, "Sira, see, she loves Swami so much that she can feel Swami's feelings. She came to Swami when she was a small baby. So many years have passed. But see, her love has only increased. It is expansion love. This is devotion." Swami said, "See, her love has only increased. All these years she came to me as a small baby, and this expansion of love is devotion."
Satya Sai Bhagavanuni Muddu Pintavamma. Satya Sai Bhagavanuni Muddu Pintavamma. నీ నిర్మల భక్తికి సాటి లేదమ్మా, నీ నిర్మల భక్తికి సాటి లేదమ్మా. సాయి గీతమ్మా,
సత్య సాయి భగవానుని ముందు పెట్టవమ్మా, నీ నిర్మల భక్తికి సాటి లేదమ్మా. సాయి గీతమ్మా, సత్య సాయి భగవాను.
That was from a song that was played and sung in front of Bhagwan after Sai Geeta's passing. In fact, this song was the background for a lovely video on Sai Geeta, and Swami was so moved looking at this beautiful creation by his boys. And it says, Satya Sai Bhagavanuki Bhagavanuni Muddu Biddavamma. it describes how Saikita was the beloved child of Swami, and how her devotion, the purity of her devotion, is incomparable. If you can feel for the Lord in every cell of your being, if you pine for Him every second of your life, if nothing else interests you in this world except His form and proximity, then my mind and His mind no longer exist. Then all become only one awareness. You are then in perfect synchronization with God, just like Saikita. Isn't it incredible to see an animal having so much love for the Lord? In fact, this reminds me of Hanuman, the greatest monkey devotee of Lord Rama, or Jatayu, the bird which sacrificed her life fighting for Mother Sita, or the cows of Gokul Vrindavan, who became lifeless without food and drink if Krishna did not accompany them to the pastoral groves. And in these times, you do not need to read the scriptures or imagine in your mind's eye, if you are a contemporary of Bhagavan's physical form, if you have seen the Satyasai Avatar, you have seen these beautiful scenes from the Bhagavatam right in front of your eyes. It was the same divine Leela being replayed. Only the age is different. The same Leela in a different age. And Swami said, she came to me when she was a small baby. In fact, after her passing on May 22nd, 2007, Swami came to the auditorium and the college, and He spoke to the staff and students. On that occasion, Swami declared, from the beginning there was an intimate relationship between Me and Saikita, and this was a purely inner relationship. And Swami went on saying, when I mention about Saikita, do not think I am emotional. It seemed like that because, you know, Bhagavan's voice was unsteady. It was so much overcome with intense feelings. And in that discourse, in a very soft and steady tone, Swami said, when I mention about Saikita, I am not deeply grief-stricken. In fact, I have no sorrows. I am not worried. I am never worried. I am not remorseful at all. This is only Vatsalyam, Swami said. This is supreme maternal love. In fact, it is the kind of spontaneous, undiluted love that a mother has for a new one. A new one who is so pure, so innocent, completely dependent only on her mother, seeking nothing but her lap, and on whose face you can verily see the pristine image of God. But as a child grows and becomes strong and intelligent, the godlike purity slowly diminishes and gets diluted with reasoning. And that love, that purity loses that spontaneity. But with Saikita, it was exactly the opposite. Her love became only purer and purer as days went by. When she first came to Prashantanilam, she was only a few weeks old, a few days old. Narrating how she came to her, Swami said in that discourse, decades ago when I was returning from Bangalore, there was a Kheda operation in the nearby forest. A Kheda operation is wherein they trap elephants by digging big pits and covering them superficially with grass, and then they beat drums and they make loud noise to chase these pachyderms, these elephants, and the poor animals, they come in herds and many fall inside these pits. And they don't then survive, they get caught. But Swami said, this one animal survived. She survived, but she was motherless and she was crying. She stopped taking food. She was helpless. She did not know where to go, what to do. And it is at this moment that Bhagwan came to know of this elephant, and Bhagwan immediately immediately accepted her. In that discourse, Swami said, I applied honey to my finger and put it in her mouth, and she went on sipping this honey. Later, through a feeding bottle, I fed her milk. And from then on, she forgot about her mother. It is I who named her, who christened her, Sai Geeta. It is almost like the child was now baptized. She was reborn. She was given a new birth as the Divine's most special child. She was hardly 2 feet in height then. And Swami said, she used to follow me everywhere, be it the kitchen, the dining hall, the bhajan hall, living room, or the washroom. She grew completely under my care. Sai Geeta then was actually half of Swami's height. She was so small that Swami could take her easily in his car. And Swami himself mentioned that in that discourse that she indeed traveled with Bhagwan in the back seat of his car. Sai Geeta wanted to be every moment with Swami, just like an infant who cannot bear separation from her mother, even for a second. And Swami enjoyed it too. A few days ago, I was talking to Mr. V.V. Raman Rao, who is the current editor of Telugu Sanatan Sarathi. He is someone who came to Bhagwan in the 60s. And he told me, as a little one, Sai Geeta had full access to Swami and Swami's room. And at times, she would even dirty Swami's room or the mandir veranda with her urine and all that. But that never bothered Swami. You know, Swami would clean it, or he would call the caretaker and together they would clean up the place. The first shed for Sai Geeta was built just next to Bhagwan's bedroom. Swami could see her from his window all the time. And whenever she was hungry, she would just look up and shout, ah, or something, you know, some sound, and there was instant communication. Swami would just come down and do everything needed to make her comfortable. Mr. Chidambaram Krishnan, again a very long-standing devotee of Bhagwan who came to him in the 50s and 60s, he says, every morning and evening one would find Swami with Sai Geeta. She would be highly obedient to Bhagwan. When Swami would call her, she would immediately jump up to him, and Swami would be either standing beside or playing with her, and she would be waving her trunk, and Swami would be petting her, patting her. And on some days, Swami would even run, and then Swami would take great delight in seeing how the little four-footed one took her tiny leaps and cutely jumped and hopped to catch up with Bhagwan. It was an enthralling sight, undoubtedly. Back then, for the devotees, it was the most exciting part of their stay in Prashanti.
కన్న బిడ్డలా సాకి తల్లి ప్రేమ పంచాడు
సత్య సాయి భగవానుని ముందు బిడ్డవమ్మా, నీ నిర్మల భక్తికి సాటి లేదమ్మా, సాయి గీతమ్మా, సత్య సాయి భగవానుని ముందు బిడ్డవమ్మా.
And this stanza of this Sai Gita song says that you lost your mother and you called out Amma, Amma, and that is when Bhagwan took you into his fold. The divine heart melted and Swami took you onto his lap and he treated you and he brought you up with all the motherly love like his own child. You are the beloved child, the dearest daughter of Sai. In fact, Sai Gita's routine those days was tightly intertwined with Swami's routine. She was a totality of nobility right from her childhood. So the first thing the tiny elephant would do every morning was to go around the mandir 3 times or 9 times, circumambulating. And next, she would prostrate in front of the shining white idol of Lord Ganesha. There used to be a Lord Ganesha in those days, just in front of the Prashanti Mandir. And then she would wait for Swami. And the moment the door opened and she saw Swami, she would kneel and offer salutations at his feet. And then, more often than not, she would make a peculiar, pleasant sound asking Swami to pat her, just to shower his love. And Swami would do that. Swami would feed her with plantains and other fruits and then stand beside her and allow only children, not adults, to feed her. And so many tiny tots would be waiting in a queue for this opportunity and Swami would be standing there and they would take the bananas and they would feed Sai Gita under Swami's constant supervision. And once she had her meals with her mom, Sai Gita would now head towards the river Chitravati to play in the sands and then jump into the river for a refreshing dip. And she would be accompanied by a young 8-year-old caretaker. Now the elephant calf would joyfully play in the Chitravati sands, throwing mud all over her body. And soon a ball game would begin with the young boy who was supposed to be her trainer and caretaker, and they would throw the ball and Sai Gita would run to collect the ball in her trunk. But on some occasions, when she's in a very sportive mood, instead of bringing the ball back, she would just run away with the ball. And this young playmate, come trainer, come in charge of Sai Gita, he would have to chase a few yards to catch up with her. And so this little warden of Sai Gita, he would get annoyed. Instead of enjoying the game and the beauty of the moment, he would think that his ward is indisciplined, and so sometimes he would punish Sai Gita with a stick, sometimes even pulling and dragging her by her trunk. Sai Gita then was very tiny, just weighed only a few kilos. But whenever this happened, the devotees who were witness to all this, they would come and tell Swami, "Swami, that boy threw Sai Gita inside the sand, or he did this to her." And Swami would invariably say, "Go and bring that boy here. He should be punished." And when the boy arrived, and when he started asking for pardon, he would say, "Swami, I will not do this again. I will not do this again." And Swami would let him go. But he was a notorious guy, and he would again commit the same mistake. He would beat Sai Gita again some other day. And then Sai Gita would come running to the mandir and he'll seek out for Swami wherever he is, be it in the interview room or bhajan hall or living room. And then the mouth would come running behind her, and soon both would appear in front of Bhagwan. And even before Bhagwan would say anything, the mouth would start complaining about Sai Gita's so-called indiscipline. But Swami, the all-knowing mother, would reprimand that young caretaker for his mistake and then comfort and console his darling daughter. In fact, even after Sai Gita became a few years old, and when she could actually retaliate to any ill treatment meted out to her irresponsibly by anyone, she would never do that. She would never retaliate. She would never hurt anyone. All she would do is she would just run to Swami. she would go to her mother and seek justice and shelter. In fact, when I was talking to Mr. Raman Rao, he narrated an incident when Swami one day no more tolerated the eccentricities of Sai Geeta's caretaker. At that time, there was one caretaker by name Chand. So let's listen to this episode by Raman Rao, sir.
Sai Geeta is Swami's foster daughter. When she was just 10 days old, the forest officer has given that trail to Swami. Swami put her in the car and brought it to Prasanthanalayam. From then onward, for at least about 20 days or 25 days, Sai Geeta was on bottle feeding. After she was weaned away from bottle feeding, then Swami started giving her plantains, apples, and so on and so forth. And sometimes she makes a surprise with the straight away she enters into and pushes the door and opens to get into Swami's room.
Swami's room?
Swami's room.
You have seen that?
Yes.
In Prasanthanalayam.
Swami had to. No, I didn't see. It was too early.
60s.
It was 60s. But Swami was telling her. She used to enter his room, and not only that, sometimes she used to urinate there.
Oh my God.
Swami had to put up with all these things, and they got it in a shed just by the side of the window. Behind the window.
Right.
He erected a shed for her, so that she could always see. And that is one aspect. Another thing is, she has got one Chand from Northern India. He was the Mahout. He was in charge of taking care of. And that fellow was very drunkard or something like that. So what happened was, one day, it was around 3 o'clock, I was there. It was way back 1968-69. And around 3 o'clock, that was the time when Swami would be still in his room. And all the people, they were not at the bedroom, but generally by 4 o'clock they will get up, and by 4:30 they will be ready and they will be all seated in the lines. So they were all spreading their bedsheets and blankets and sleeping with their children. At that time...
You are saying early morning program?
No, 4 o'clock in the morning. Evening.
But who was sleeping?
All the devotees on the open space, because at that time there is no Kulwantara garden, the whole thing is an open space.
Correct.
In front of Mandir, all the people were sleeping. As you see, they were just about to get up.
So there is no special darshan time and all that?
4:30.
4:30.
4:30. 4:30 to 6 intervals. And 6 to 7 bhajan.
So in the afternoon also devotees used to lie down here only?
They had to go. At that time there were no rooms. Hardly were there rooms for Rama Rao and some Raja Reddy and that Verapad Sala for Kamavadani. So most of us, even myself, if they go in the greatest place to lie down under a tree.
Oh my God.
Even the trees were very limited at that time.
Oh.
And the sky is the roof and the ground is the bed, mostly.
Oh.
And if there is rain, we get soaked. And most of us, we will rush to the veranda, as many as the veranda can hold, of course, we will be there. The rest of the people will be soaked. And after half an hour or 1 hour, they will get dry and they will be there.
Oh my God.
Those are the days which were more enjoyable, because it paid us dividends. Because afterwards Swami used to speak to all of us and they talk about the rain and appreciate all our devotion with which, you know, we braved the rain and all that. So that was...
Swami used to compensate.
Yes. One day, at that time, the head was outside. So one day, Sai Geeta came rushing, running from Gopuram gate and running around. And the children were there, Madhu people were there, the ladies were there, and there were children, many people were lying, and in between them it was running. And it was like a madcap. Then Sun is got down from upstairs, and then Sai Yogi said, ba, 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 let this come, come, come. And Guru was scared that Sai Yogi may crush some of these people. The children were there, 2 years, 1 year, 6 months old children, they were lying. Sweetie has got the 60 cents. Somehow, he said, the gift or whatever it is, he never, nobody was hurt. And when he came to Swami, Swami asked, what's the matter? Then he raised it, it turned, and showed it to the ear. Uh-huh. And then we were just wondering, Swami turned around and looked at the ear, and there was a bleeding here.
Oh.
Immediately called for the chant. Mm. And on this spot, kicked him and dismissed him.
Oh, dismissed him?
Dismissed on this spot. Mm. And from then onward, Vajrayati was taken care of.
Oh.
That fellow was a dental, and that instrument is one which is...
You control the
elephant. Yes,
he had hurt her.
It is called in Telugu Ankusham, I don't know what, yes. What it is. Whatever it is, it's a very piercing thing. And she is supposed to be old only, but he has pierced it. And Swami got wild. And then the Vajrayati early sent for a veterinary surgeon from Anantapur. He was brought in court, and that fellow was afraid of $20 million. For a day he stayed there, and inside it was treated. That was the kind of relationship.
So that is one instance where Swami no more tolerated any injustice being done to Sai Gita. And at that time, as I mentioned, she was just a source of joy for all the ashram inmates, because she was very much a part of the ashram. She was the cutest kid of the ashram, and everyone wanted to pet her, fondle her. In fact, in her first 6 months, anybody could take her out and play with her. She would never harm anyone. Never. And Swami too allowed others to touch and caress her. She was for everyone. Just like Swami was. Very accessible. Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram, who came to Swami as early as 1943, she vividly remembers those fun and frolic days of Sai Geeta. She says, I have wonderful memories of Sai Geeta, the baby elephant, when she was first brought to Puttaparthi. We, the children, would follow her everywhere in the days of old when hardly a few hundred people would be present in the ashram. We were always amazed at her one-pointed devotion to Swami and her excitement as soon as she could sense his presence even from a distance. Swami in those days would quite often visit her shed, and she would somehow know Swami was coming even before we had spotted Swami. And she would be up early in the morning at 3, and having been taken for a bath in the river Chitravati by the then caretaker Murali, she would arrive looking very neat with the namam and kumkum on her forehead to run around the Prashantinilayam Mandir with us. We would be behind her circumambulating the sanctum sanctorum 3 times every morning. And after this, she would patiently wait for Swami to come out near the lotus circle. The lotus circle was there in the olden days, just in front of Mandir. And as soon as she spotted Swami, she would spring forward to garland him and touch his beloved feet with her trunk. And Mr. Pedaredi, who looked after Sai Geeta for more than 20 years, he says, this practice of touching Bhagwan's feet the moment she saw Bhagwan never changed over the years. Though her agility changed with age reduced, but till the last, the first thing she did whenever she got a chance to be in Bhagwan's presence is touch his feet. In the early 60s, the regular evening quote-unquote appointment of Swami with Sai Geeta was a sight which devotees looked forward to with great anticipation and elation. Because she would wait at the gate on the lady's side where Swami's car used to enter into Sai Kulwant Hall. And if for some reason darshan was delayed, she would be very impatient. She would be twisting and twirling her tiny trunk, intermittently flapping her lotus leaf-sized ears vigorously, and swift, her strong and swift legs, they would be jumpy and they would be restless. She would be eagerly looking at Mandir, unable to bear the delay of Bhagwan's darshan. And when Bhagwan came, it was simply divine thrill in totality, not only for Sai Gita, but for everyone witnessing that sublime play of pure love. Swami would first walk up to her and she would almost kneel down, her hind legs half bent and front legs folded to the maximum extent possible in supplication. Her height now would just be mere 2 feet, and she would lift her trunk up and down, up and down, up and down 3 times in salutation. And after she had offered her prostrations at Bhagwan's feet, she would take a garland, raise her nimble trunk over the 5-foot frame of her beloved, and very carefully, with lots of glee, with happiness, she would slip it, Bhagwan's opulent hair, onto his shoulders. And Swami, the moment the garland would fall onto his being, Swami would flash an enchanting smile. He would pat her cheek so affectionately, and he would start speaking to her. Time would stand still, watching the Lord so much at ease with his devotee. Like a teacher who is never tired of talking to his best student, the Lord too is most happy to be with his perfect devotee. Swami would then feed her. There would be a bag full of fruits, all the fruits that are offered at the shrine in the mandir. There would be a bucket of teertham for her to drink. And one by one, Swami would put each apple, apples were her favorite, Swami would put each apple in her mouth, and she would want to be fed no other way. Mr. Pedaridi says that till her last moment, she never accepted fruit from Swami on her trunk. She will insist that Swami put it personally into her mouth. But if it was anyone else, she would refuse it, or she would accept it only in the trunk. But if it was Bhagwan, she will want Bhagwan to put it right into her mouth personally. Just like a child who is most comfortable and secure with her mother. And only after Swami had spent considerable time with her, would she reluctantly let him go and continue the darshan every evening. So this was the dharma that used to go on for so many years when she was a teenager. And those days, as I mentioned, she lived just next door, and it was as if she was sharing the mandir with Bhagwan. But as the number of devotees multiplied and Sai Gita then had to be shifted, and Swami instructed an ashram officer to erect a shed for her on the northern end of the mandir, facing Bhagwan's residence, just in front of the gopuram where currently the idols of Lord Rama, Lakshmana and Sita stand. So her small enclosure which came up was airy. It had a drinking well beside it, but it faced east, which means Sai Gita could not see Swami during darshan. And this is something she just could not bear. For her to watch Swami coming in and out of the mandir, the face of her home had to face south. But this was facing east. So she was not able to see Swami properly. And every day it was a torture for her. And one day she apparently got so upset with that orientation of that shed and the way the shed was constructed that in a rage, she just brought the whole tin structure down with a massive trunk. Sheer muscle power, she just grazed it to the ground. It was a tin and concrete structure. And the moment this happened, Swami called the officer and Swami reprimanded him for ineffectively executing Swami's command. And then Sai Gita, in no time, now had a new room, and this new room was facing south, exactly how she wanted it. Now she could see Swami uninterruptedly, directly from her home. Sai Gita spent many good years in this home, close to the mandir, during the late 60s and early 70s. But when preparations began for the 50th birthday celebrations of Bhagwan in 1975, she had to be moved from the Prashanti Mandir premises because the Mandir was needed to accommodate the mammoth crowd which was expected for Bhagwan's 50th birthday celebrations. It was during that birthday that Bhagwan gave darshan to the teeming crowds from a helicopter. And so to accommodate the devotees, her residence had to be shifted, and now she was placed in a big shed in the southwest corner of the ashram. And it was in this year that the Sri Satya Sai Gokulam also was inaugurated by Swami for the cows. And soon Sai Geeta was relocated now to live with the cows. In fact, this was the first time she was physically far from her beloved. But that never diminished her devotion for the Lord. Didn't diminish it even by an iota. Mr. Peddareddy says, in 1976, one day, a very interesting incident happened. The primary school and the college buildings were under construction. And these structures were coming up at the foot of two hills. So this terrain was obviously undulating with big rocks, sharp-edged boulders and thorns and all that. And on Swami's bidding, the engineers had constructed a bund, a barrier, which would facilitate the accumulation of water flowing down the hill. So it was primarily meant for the buffaloes of the Gokulam to cool off and, you know, bathe with pleasure. So there was this water next to the bund, where the buffaloes went. And the distance between the primary school work site, where Swami would visit occasionally to oversee the construction work, and Gokulam, where Sai Geeta lived with other cows, was around 400 meters. And one day, when Swami was on one such inspection tour to the school site, Sai Geeta somehow felt Bhagwan's presence there, so she immediately set herself free from the chain and just ran in Bhagwan's direction. Absolutely unmindful of the terrible terrain, she jumped across rocks, bounced on the boulders, cared least for the bund, and in minutes she crossed the half-kilometer hurdle track, and only when she rested at the feet of Bhagwan, she slowed down, and then she bowed down obsequiously, and now she had become a picture of peace and serenity. Swami was so moved, so deeply moved with her love and devotion. He cared for her, he caressed her, and then to all the devotees around, Swami said, see her devotion. In comparison, you are all dunnapotas, you are all buffaloes. Though an animal, Sai Geeta had divine instincts. And though human by birth, sometimes we give way to animal instincts. Perhaps one of the most profound demonstrations of her steadfast dedication and purity of devotion was an event that happened in the 80s. This was the time when Sai Geeta was staying in this high-rise shed constructed exclusively for her in front of the senior boys' hostel, as I mentioned before. She was moved there once the number of cows increased in Gokulam and a greater need was felt to give her more space and more attention. So the Central Trust then purchased this additional piece of land in front of the hostel, and thus was born this spacious 15-foot enclosure padded with thick beds of sand and surrounded by coconut trees, and it was actually nestled in a mangrove. So it had plenty of space for her to rove and relax in. Moreover, the adjoining extra land was cultivated for her fodder. Of course, Sai Geeta now was bereft of any company here, but that is how she always wanted her life to be. She was always happy when she was alone. Happier when she was with her caretaker Peddareddy. She loved Peddareddy, and she was happiest when Swami was beside her. So it was during this time that certain elders mentioned to Swami the idea of sending her to the forest for a short while for breeding. In fact, it was some forest officers. They said that it is illegal and it is not proper, against the law of the land, to have an elephant during her season. We have to send her to the forest. Otherwise, they might become very aggressive and so on. Swami, from the start, somehow never seemed to be convinced about this proposal, but because of the dogged persuasion of so many senior members of the ashram and the forest officials and government officials, Swami finally gave in. And so it happened that the reluctant Sai Geeta was now sent to the forest along with two caretakers, Vasant Rao and Satyanarayana. It was a 13-day journey by walking. There were sufficient periods of rest on the way at various locations, but it was a long journey. And this caretaker Satyanarayana says, once they were there in the forest, Sai Geeta was least interested in any of the elephant of the jungle. She would never go near the elephants of the wild. Forget finding a companion. So just to ensure that she develops the desire to have a family, these mahouts, these Vasant Rao and Satyanarayana, they should keep two baby elephants around her. And what Sai Geeta would do is she would allow the small ones to be with her as long as these mahouts were watching. And once they were out of sight, she would quietly drive these elephant babies away. And on many nights, she would even quietly escape from the jungle. And she would be sure enough on the path, on the road to Puttaparthi. And in the morning, Vasant Rao and Satyanarayana will find she's not there, and they will try to look for her everywhere, and then finally they will follow her big footprints and identification marks left on the soil by the thick iron chain and ring and chain, and they would see her some 6 or 7 kilometers away walking. And this happened for not 1 or 2 days or 2-3 weeks, for 3 months. Nothing could ever budge her focus from Swami, even to a microscopic extent. The mahouts tried everything. They exhausted all their options. In fact, it was at this juncture that something again wonderful happened. Swami visited the Mudumalai forest one day, where she was there, and it was totally unanticipated. The forest had a canal, and Swami's car stopped at the left bank, while Sai Geeta was there on the right bank. And the moment Swami came and Sai Geeta spotted Swami, she was grazing nearby. She acted as if she was possessed by some gigantic force. Without a second thought, she jumped into the canal and she started swimming vigorously. And concerned about her safety, the mouse also jumped into the canal, and they were trying to catch hold of her ears, her trunk, but nothing could stop her that day. And she reached, somehow safely she reached the other shore, and the moment she was there on the other side, Swami immediately opened the door, and Sai Geeta was in bliss. Swami started fondling her, patting her, you know, inquiring with her, speaking to her with utmost love and concern. It was as if the mother had found her long lost daughter. And there were bags of fruits for her in the car which Bhagwan had brought, and Swami lovingly fed her. Sai Geeta was too overwhelmed with joy. She didn't want to eat. She just wanted to be with Swami. She just let those fruits be in her mouth. She didn't even chew them or swallow them. And after a few moments, after Swami had spent some time with her, showering her love, Swami got into the car and he left instructions with the mahouts that Sai Geeta should probably stay for some more time in the jungle. And then the car moved off. And once the car left, Sai Geeta's condition became so pathetic. She just could not accept that. It was as if she was dropped. It was as if life was taken out of her being, as if she was put in hell. all the fruits that Bhagwan had given, she spat out all the fruits and she started crying. She was crying loudly. And the mouth says, I have never seen anyone so depressed in my life earlier. I mean, she was so weeping and we were helpless. She was inconsolable. And she was constantly grumbling. And after that day, the mouth says that her these night escapades of going away to Puttaparthi in the night, they just became even more frequent. Every night she would wait to just somehow escape the jungle and come up to Puttaparthi. And when this happened repeatedly, again and again, then the caretakers, Vasantrao and Satyanayana, they concluded that she was never ever going to mate with any elephant. And then just sent a message to Swami, saying, Swami, this is the frame of mind of Sai Gita. And then Swami sent message that yes, she could return to Puttaparthi. But interestingly, the story does not end there. In fact, the divine drama begins now. After Sai Gita returned to Puttaparthi, again at the instance of elders, a veterinary doctor was called. And this doctor tested the urine of Sai Gita and he pronounced, she is pregnant. And Satyanarayan and Vasant, they were sure beyond doubt that no crossing took place in the forest. But nobody believed them because here was a doctor who said that she is pregnant. And the most funny part is, even Swami apparently held to what the doctor said. So the news spread in Puttaparthi that Sai Gita is going to deliver a baby. It spread like wildfire. And the doctor who had come from Kerala stayed with her in the shed to attend to any eventuality. And in fact, after a few days, the doctor even declared that Sai Gita is now going to deliver in a few weeks. And so in no time a fence rose around her living area to give her the needed privacy, and everyone was now more than convinced that Sai Gita was going to become a mother. And not only this, Swami also used to visit her often and, you know, inquire about her health with the doctor. In fact, on one occasion it is said, Swami even pointed to Sai Gita's belly and he told Professor Kasturi, see Kasturi, can you see the baby moving in her stomach? And the D-Day was approaching. And the doctor, everyone was waiting for him to announce when the delivery would be. And he had mentioned a particular week, so that much awaited week arrived. The air was thick in anticipation and everyone awaited the good news with bated breath and enthusiasm. And that week got extended, 1, 2, 3. Every time the week was getting extended by another week and the week, and slowly everyone was now getting suspicious because there was now no activity in the Sai Gita shed, but the doctor kept on telling dates. And now everyone became very suspicious, and one day the whole bubble burst a month later when the doctor suddenly did a complete U-turn and said, she is not pregnant. What was Swami's reaction to this, we do not know, but I'm sure Swami must have smiled heartily and mischievously. Because this whole drama was an alluring mix of comedy and mystery. And one wonders, I mean, what was the purpose of this divine play? Why did Bhagavan do all this? In fact, all this became crystal clear when immediately after this episode, Swami emphatically declared to the devotees around, Sai Gita is a Shuddha Brahmacharini. She is a pristine and perfect celibate. Swami said, she has come for me. She has never and will never mix with any elephant. In fact, when I heard that and I reflected, I was only reminded of this appalling test that Mother Sita underwent in the sacred Ramayana. Now, even though the omniscient Lord Rama was fully aware of Sita's purity and integrity, when you analyze the whole episode where Sita has to go through Agni Pariksha and all that, you know, every single twist in that Lord's story is only to teach mankind a lesson. And he wants to do it in such a way that that impact resonates in the sphere of man's mind for centuries to come. And that is what happened. The bond between Swami and Gita only strengthened after this whole drama. And her unwavering devotion to Swami was an inspiration which no one could easily ignore. In fact, whenever Swami used to go to Vrindavan for long periods in those days, he would always make arrangements for Sai Gita to stay near his residence in Bangalore. And on most occasions, Sai Gita would walk the way to Bangalore, escorted by her caretakers and Sai volunteers, with proper rest stations arranged for her at appropriate distances along the route. All her movements and moments were closely intertwined with Bhagwan's movements and moments. In fact, there is an hilarious incident which Mr. B.N. Narasimhamurthy, the former warden of the Vrindavan hostel, narrates. This concerns Sai Gita's arrival to the Vrindavan. This happened in the early 80s when Swami used to stay in the old Vrindavan bungalow, and Mr. Ramabrahmam was the caretaker of the Bangalore ashram. Mr. Ramabrahmam used to sleep inside Bhagwan's bungalow. One day, late into the night, maybe past midnight, when Ramabrahmam suddenly got up because his sleep was disturbed by some weird sounds outside the doors and windows. It was not very loud, but it was a very mystifying, muffled clatter, some kind of a hissing noise. There were some other noises and some hissing noise. And very perturbed, Ramabrahmam looked through the window, and it was... he had strict instruction from Swami that he should not open the door, Bhagwan's residence door, unless he knows the person. And what he saw through that window in that dark hour was only a trunk. And so he got really panicky. And he was wondering what to do. What is this thing outside the door? And interestingly, at the same instant, Swami came there in the midnight from inside. And Ramabrahmam just blurted out, "Swami, Swami, something has come, something has come." And Swami smiled and calmed him and said, "Ramabrahmam, do not worry, it is Sai Gita." And then Swami himself opened the door and he pacified Sai Gita, who was hungry for Bhagwan's darshan. And then Swami made arrangements for her stay, and after she was comfortable, Swami retired to his room. You know, when the devotee's love is pure, the Lord doesn't care whether it is midnight, mid-air, mid-forest or mid-ocean. Her 4 decades of association with Swami is not only a love story, but a tale which in its every facet demonstrates how inseparable the bond of pure love can be. There's a sweet experience which Mrs. Gita Mohan Ram narrated. This again happened in Vrindavan. In February 1972, Swami was preparing to leave the Vrindavan ashram to come and stay in Gita Mohan Ram's father's, Dr. R.S. Padmanabhan's house in Bangalore for 2 days. Because it was the time of the Akhanda Bhajan celebration, and it was Dr. Padmanabhan and his father who actually started this concert of Akhanda Bhajans in those days. Gita Mohan Ram was a young child of 8, and 4 from the family, Gita Mohan Ram, his brother, his aunt and his father, they all had gone to Vrindavan to bring Swami to their home, which was in Jayanagar, for the Akhanda Bhajan. And as Swami was getting ready to leave, they could hear Sai Gita trumpeting loudly from far behind Swami's residence. Because again, she somehow knew that Swami was leaving, and she was leaving for 2 days. So they could make out from her voice that, you know, she was very desperate. So Swami responded to her call, and Swami walked to the rear of the building, and all of them followed Swami. And once Swami went there, Swami caressed her, Swami stroked her cheeks and, you know, fed her with apples. And finally, when Bhagwan was about to leave, she just put her trunk around Bhagwan's shoulders and he just pulled Swami gently, but very firmly. She just held on to Swami and she did not let Swami go. And Swami kept on pleading with her in Telugu, Vidu Gita, Vidu, please, I have to go, Nepovala, I have to go. Please leave me, Gita, I have to go, it is already getting late. Bangaru, I will come back soon, please leave me, leave me. It was more than 5-10 minutes of gentle persuasion by Swami. Only then Sai Gita let him go reluctantly. And again, even as Bhagwan was moving away, she lifted her trunk and held on to Bhagwan's right arm and again would not let it go for a few minutes. Again, Swami tried offering her some fruits and all that, but nothing was... I mean, apple is no consolation for Bhagwan going, and she refused to accede. Finally, after a lot of cajoling, Swami somehow extricated himself from her. And by now, Bhagwan's robe was covered with her saliva, because she kept on nuzzling him all through. But Swami was happy, I mean, unmindful of what had happened to his gown, to his robe. Swami then turned to all the people there and then he said, see, your devotion should be one-pointed like her. She is not even tempted by the fruit I offer. She only wants me and thinks of me at all times. When you are like her, then you will receive darshan, sparshan and sambhashan. You will receive the fortune of the vision, the touch and the conversation with the Lord. If you are like her, all this will come spontaneously to you. And then somehow Swami gave one last loving pat to Sai Gita and somehow left, even though she was very reluctant to leave Swami. And Swami said, I have to go and I have to change my robe. Wait for a few minutes and then we'll leave. And that is, I mean, how wonderful is this relationship? And how fortunate she is and how fortunate we are. How fortunate each one of us is to not only hear about this, but to know that we have such a Lord. And this is how we can cultivate such a love for the Lord.
చేతలతో సాయిని అనరించావు స్వామి కురులు ముందాడి ప్రేమ పంచావు స్వామి కురులు ముందాడి ప్రేమ పంచావు సత్య సాయి భగవానుని భక్తితో కొలిచావు సత్య సాయి భగవానుని భక్తితో కొలిచాము స్వామి క్షణం మరుగైతే కన్నీరు నింపావు స్వామి క్షణం మరుగైతే కన్నీరు నింపావు సత్య సాయి భగవానుని ముందు బిడ్డవమ్మా నీ నిర్మల భక్తికి సాటి లేదమ్మా సాయి గీతమ్మా సత్య సాయి భగవానుని ముందు బిడ్డవమ్మా.
This stanza means, by your playful actions, Sai Gita, you made Swami so happy. You played with Swami's hair. You showed your love to Swami. You worshipped Swami with your devotion. And if you could not see Bhagwan for a second, you drowned yourself in sorrow. That was how deep your love for Bhagwan is. In fact, there are many more stanzas in this song, and each stanza is so beautiful. And when you see the video along with this song, you would never be the same again. You would never leave your eyes dry, because these are moments which would turn even a stone hearted. It would melt even a stone converted into a cotton. Such is the power of pure love, and such is the power of the devotee. Swami says, a devotee's prayer, a devotee's love is God's greatest weakness. And in this relationship of Sai Gita, you had a demonstration of what this power of pure love can do. In fact, today we have only scratched the surface. We have just, because there is so much more to her life. There is so much more to the lives of so many who are associated with her. I was talking to Mr. Pedareddy, and he was telling me how Sai Gita was not in no way an animal. She was a saint. She was an evolved soul. She was an enlightened being. And there are so many beautiful aspects to her personality. And the story of her final moments, as I mentioned, what happened on May 18th to May 22nd. It is filled with very, very profound moments. Each one is an eye-opener, and it's packed with lessons for us, for each one of us who wants to experience Bhagwan's love, who wants to love Bhagwan, and who wants to win His grace. With Bhagwan's grace, we will dwell more on her life next Thursday at the same time. Next Thursday is May 22nd, and that is the day actually when she decided to merge with her master. And we will dwell on what are the lessons that we draw from her mergence, so that we too feel that union with the divine. There is no better path, easier path, royal path than the path of love. The Bhagavad Gita gives us the three pathways to God: Karma Marga, Bhakti Marga, Jnana Marga. Swami has always mentioned how the Bhakti Marga, the path of love, is the best suited, the easiest, and the most beautiful of them, and the greatest, one of the greatest demonstrations of this path of love is the life of Sai Gita. Earlier we have had two cover stories on Sai Gita on Radio Sai website. You are most welcome to visit and read them. And as we speak to many more people associated with Sai Gita, there are so many insightful anecdotes that are coming to us. And we hope and pray to Bhagwan that we will compile these two and offer at His lotus feet, so that they become eternal sources of inspiration for all of us on this path of love, to love, with love, so that one day we merge in love. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us all through the day. We are completing almost 2 years since we started this Thursday Live program, and we thank each one of you for your support, for your feedback, for your guidance, and your words of encouragement. It would have not happened without His grace, His energy, and His love. We ever remain grateful to Bhagwan for this opportunity, and we thank each one of you on this beautiful journey the last 2 years. If you have any queries or comments, please feel free. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. We welcome every word that you write. And as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama presented by Bal Vikas Children on Chinese New Year Celebrations Day 2009. It is entitled Love and Gratitude. So as I take leave, finally, a loving sign-off and sweet goodbye from Prashanthi Nilayam. Let us immerse ourselves in His love and make our lives a saga, a song of love, a Sai Gita. Thank you so much. Salam.